Hi, this is Dan Sheridan. Welcome to My Freedom Frontier Radio. It's a pleasure spending this time with you. Happy Thanksgiving. And in this radio program, we're going to talk to you about the history of Thanksgiving. We're also going to talk about George Washington's proclamation. What was he so grateful for, and what did he want us to be grateful for? And it has to do with our form of government. What is it? And later in this program, we're going to hear from President Ronald Reagan on this very topic. You know, I love Thanksgiving. It's my favorite holiday. It's right up there with the 4th of July in my book. You know, I like the fact that you don't have to buy presents and deal with crowded shopping centers for Thanksgiving. It's all about family, turkey, and of course, for many others, football. You know, Thanksgiving is a long history. Thanksgiving celebrations didn't originate with the American colonists. For instance, among the ancient Hebrews, the Feast of Tabernacles was an occasion to be thankful for the harvest. In England, under Edward III, there was a national Thanksgiving after the Battle of Crecy in northern France, which took place in 1346 during the Hundred Years' War. And Henry V celebrated one not too long after that. The Puritans brought this custom to the colonies. On December 11th, 1621, a Thanksgiving was held in Plymouth to celebrate a good harvest. Another one took place on February 22nd, 1631, and here's how that one came about. Life was hard for the Massachusetts Bay colonists. It was really tough. They suffered from the cold and poor crops, and they came very close to starving. However, they didn't give up. They came to America to work hard and to be free. They wanted to make a life for themselves and for their children and grandchildren. So they were going to stick with it no matter how hard things got. One of the Massachusetts Bay towns was Charleston, and town records from 1630 tell us that the people were forced to live on clams and mussels, groundnuts, and acorns. That's a rough way to go. But you know what? It got even worse. But it was at that time, when things were at its worst, that relief came. A ship arrived from England full of provisions, thank God. And as a result, on February 22nd, 1631, they held a day of Thanksgiving celebrating the arrival of the ship. Now, during the colonial period, there wasn't a specific day to celebrate Thanksgiving, as we've seen. They were celebrated on specific occasions as a response to God to some sort of blessing or success. On October 3rd, 1789, President George Washington issued the first Thanksgiving proclamation under our current Constitution, and part of it reads as follows. Whereas it's the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor. And whereas both houses of Congress have by their joint committee requested me to recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer, to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many signal favors of Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity peaceably to establish a form of government for their safety and happiness. I hope you noticed that last part. Notice that Washington and Congress stressed that we should have grateful hearts toward Almighty God for the form of government that protects our safety and happiness. Now, if we're to be thankful for the form of government, as Washington and Congress want us to be, we should probably understand what makes this form of government so special that it calls for our Thanksgiving, don't you think? So what is this form of government? Now, our federal system of government was invented at the Constitutional Convention. There was nothing like it before 1787. The word federal changed meaning in 1787 to describe the new system. Federal is derived from a Latin word meaning union or league. It's where the word confederation comes from. Before 1787, federal was used as an adjective to describe a confederation. So here's what the founders did. They mingled elements of a national government with those of a confederation and called it federal. The federal system of government includes both the national government as well as the state governments. I know it's in vogue today to call the national government as the federal government. We hear it all the time. We talk about the federal government, and the first thing that comes to mind is Washington. But that's not really accurate. The state governments, as well as the national government, are governments. They're part of the federal system. The powers of government are dispersed in the United States. Each level of government has its own jurisdiction, which the other levels of government can't invade. Now let's take a look at the national government itself. It is a government limited to the enumerated powers granted to it in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. The states are limited as well, but we're going to look at the national government right now. And here's how it works. The founders didn't believe government is capable of directing all human affairs. They believed that man is limited and fallible. I think we all agree on that. And as a result, every institution of man is limited and fallible as well. Now, the founders didn't think that human error magically disappears when men meet together in Congress. There seems to be many today who think that somehow when people assemble in Congress, they can't really make mistakes. And this is why the founders believe that government should be limited, and that's why they created the Constitution. But the founders wanted something more than just limitations on a piece of paper. They were fully aware that politicians either ignore or reconstruct paper limitations. So they went beyond a paper limitation and put into the form of government itself a built-in restraint system. They did this, first of all, by separating the government into three branches: legislative, executive, and judicial. And not only that, the legislative body itself is divided into two houses. So for any law to be passed, it requires the approval of all three branches. First, it must go through both houses of Congress, then signed by the president. And if the president vetoes it, it has to be repassed by two-thirds majorities in both houses. But that's not all. If the courts deem a law to be unconstitutional, it's not enforced. There's even more. The courts need the cooperation of the executive branch to use force. Let's look at this a little further. The checks and balances are incredible. The House and the Senate check each other, since no law can be passed without the approval of both houses. The president checks both houses through the veto power. The Congress can also check the president by overriding his veto by a two-thirds majority vote. The Congress can also check the president because it controls the money and can withhold funds from the executive branch. The president must have the approval of the Senate for foreign treaties. The judiciary can check the legislature by ruling on the constitutionality of the laws they pass. The Congress, in turn, can check the judiciary by restricting the extent of its jurisdiction as well as controlling how much money goes towards its operations. The Congress can also create amendments which, if approved, could greatly affect how the judiciary and executive branches operate. And most importantly, the people themselves. They check their representatives every 2 years, the president every 4 years, and the senators every 6 years at the ballot box. So we see that the founders went through great lengths to see that there are checks and balances in our form of government. And it's in this way the founders hoped that each branch would be jealous of its prerogatives and check the other branches from overstepping their bounds. But the states are part of this as well. States existed before the national government. The national government is actually a creature of the states, not the other way around. The states simply yielded to the national government some of their powers, but they still retained power in their own jurisdictions. So, each level of government was to be jealous of their jurisdictions and be a check against the other levels of government in case they usurp unconstitutional powers. Now, it even goes further than this. Even the manner of how the people are chosen for office is part of the checks and balances. Each branch of government is independent in its actions, and that's because each branch is selected by different electorates. The members of the House are chosen by the people in their districts. The Senate was originally chosen by the state legislators and represented the state governments, but this changed with the 17th Amendment. We can't get into that now. The president is chosen by the Electoral College. This is a distinct group of people chosen for that occasion. Judges are appointed by the president with the advice of the Senate. And once the judges are appointed, they are completely independent, and that's because they serve for life. They weren't beholden to the Congress or the president for how they ruled. And thus, each branch is independent of the other, and no branch can use force against another branch. This is the form of government George Washington recommended that we thank God for. Washington's proclamation concludes this way: "And also that we may then unite in most humbly offering our prayers and supplications to the great Lord and ruler of nations, and beseech him to pardon our national and other transgressions, to enable us all, whether in public or private stations, to perform our several and relative duties properly and punctually, to render our national government a blessing to all people by constantly being a government of wise, just, and constitutional laws, discreetly and faithfully executed and obeyed." So if we're going to be thankful for our liberties, we need to know what they are and how best to preserve them. A good place to start is to learn the Constitution and the principles of the Founding Fathers. President Ronald Reagan has this to say.
You know, the Statue of Liberty and this wonderful holiday called Thanksgiving go together naturally because although as Americans we have many things for which to be thankful, none is more important than our liberty. Liberty, that quality of government, that brightness of mind and spirit for which the Pilgrim Fathers braved the seas and Americans through two centuries have laid down their lives. We are free to speak our minds, to enjoy an unfettered and vigorous press, and to make government abide by the limits we deem just. While millions live behind walls, we remain free to travel throughout the land, to share this precious day with those we love most deeply, the members of our families. My fellow Americans, let us keep this Thanksgiving Day sacred. Let us thank God for the bounty and goodness of our nation. And as a measure of our gratitude, let us rededicate ourselves to the preservation of this, the land of the free, and the home of the brave. Happy Thanksgiving, and God bless you all.
This is Dan Sheridan. Thanks for listening. I want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving. Don't eat too much. For more information, go to nccs.net. That's nccs.net.